Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on a Monday, June the 27th, 2022, last Monday in the month of June, 13 minutes past the hour, 66 degrees, sunny skies here in Marion, talking sloppy joes and how do you make a good radio antenna out of things you can find in your home. Or if you have anything else you want to talk about, 740-751-4038. What do you make of the stories in the Marion Star that have now continued for another week, kind of tied into the River Valley graduation speech back at the end of May? That was before Memorial Day. But now the stories today or yesterday, or I'm not even really sure when they were in, to be honest with you. I'm not sure how the online version of the Star runs with the actual paper version. But another letter to the editor in support of the LGBTQ youth. And then there was a story talking about a Pride group launching here in Marion because of the, or following the River Valley speech. And again, people can start a group, but I don't know why that group would not have been here prior to that speech. I guess I'm still missing the connection. Now, should he have given that speech? It wasn't even a speech of all about that. It was one line in a speech. Should he have said that in that speech? Probably not. That wasn't the best place to do it. But boy, have we drug this out now for more than a month and 15 or 16 stories. I wonder why this touched off I don't even know what I would call it. I don't know why it touched off such a nerve with people. Does anybody know? Maybe I'm just missing the point here. Give me a buzz. 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038. Now, here's another thing. Now, Friday, we talked about this some, because Friday we were on the air when Roe versus Wade got overturned. Of course, the abortion law got overturned Friday morning by the Supreme Court. And we were on the air, and we had Sam Donaldson on, and we had Mary Ellen Withrow on. And the coverage, when I got off the air Friday, all day Friday, was about that. And then when we came on Friday night, I thought, you know, I do not want to talk about this. Everybody is saying what needs to be said. And we had done some interviews on it on Friday morning. So, but I do, here's what I want to say after the weekend passed. Because honestly, I think every radio show I listened to over the weekend was talking about it in some form or fashion. Almost every church service was talking about it in some form or fashion. Certainly the television and radio and newspapers were all talking about it in some form or fashion. And there's a show coming up after this today that's going to talk about Roe versus Wade. Mid-morning coffee break with Adam Lepp, with Dr. Feynman, who apparently has made up with Adam, or Adam's made up with him, at least to do the one show today at 10:15, and I imagine Linda will talk about it today at 4:10 on Voice of the People. I can't imagine she would not. Now, here's what I want to say about this whole thing. And these are just points, because to be honest with you, I'm not going to... Here are two things about this. Number one, I'm not going to take an opinion on it because I just don't believe in taking an opinion on anything like this on the air, because I think that both sides have good points. I can understand why both sides feel the way they do. Okay, that being said, here is what here are my comments on what I saw over the weekend that are just my observations from this whole thing. Now, it seemed as if the people who were talking about it acted as if it made abortion illegal, but it didn't. All the ruling did was basically kick it back to the states and say the state can decide if they would like abortion or not. And as a matter of fact, there were a lot of people saying that it's going to be community by community. Now, if you are pro-life and have been arguing against this for a long time, I don't know that that is going to end up being a good thing, because my guess is probably half the states will choose to keep abortion, and half the states will probably choose not to. But community to community, I mean, for instance, like here in Marion, I mean, I don't know anything about abortion clinics. I don't know where you have to go to get one. I don't know anything about that. But I don't think we have a clinic here in Marion that does that. But if the local community is left now to decide whether or not it should be legal in Marion, you might see something like that pop up. You know what it reminds me of is the marijuana laws. You know, when nationally they said it's illegal, federal law, marijuana is illegal. Well, that people were still doing it, but it was kind of disparate. Well, when they kicked it to the states and said, well, the state can decide. Well, now we have a dispensary here in Marion that people can actually, I mean, people are making, I'm sure, tax dollars off of. So I'm not really sure if this is going to end up being all that good for the people who are anti-abortion. And I'll tell you another thing it does. Another thing it does is it makes, it takes it out of the court and it puts it in the politicians' hands. And it's my understanding that any governor or possibly Congress in the end could just make this a law of the land and skip the court. And then there would be no case to be heard in front of the Supreme Court. So that could be a problem, because it's going to be a lot harder to get that off the book than it would be a court decision. And my final point on this is that here's an issue. All of the recent judges who have been sworn into the Supreme Court, which I think there have been three in the last few years, they all, during their Senate confirmation hearings, were asked about Roe versus Wade. And they all basically said, that's case law, and I don't have their transcripts, but basically, we're not going to mess with it, was basically what they all said. Now, they're under oath in the Senate saying that, and all of the new justices voted to get rid of it. So, clearly, when they were making those statements to the Senate, They knew how they were going to vote on this. I mean, a lot of them haven't even been there 2 years yet. They knew how they were going to vote. So they, under oath, a judge, a Supreme Court judge, lied under oath to get that lifetime appointment. Now, here's what I don't understand. Why didn't they just say, we believe it should be gone? If that's how you felt, then why not just say that under oath? Because, you know, it was interesting over the weekend that, who is it? Manchin, the Democrat, and Collins, the Republican, who both were in those hearings, one a Democrat, one a Republican, and I believe they both voted for all of these justices, said they felt that they were misled by the answers that they all gave with their confirmation votes. So, you know, the end result is the end result, and what's going to happen now is going to happen now. But I don't know why it all went down the way it did. I guess that's the weird part of it. Because I think now you've put this in the hands of the politicians. And I say this, in 2022, politicians' main objective seems to be getting reelected. And my guess would be that if it is true that 70% of the people are in favor of Roe versus Wade, that if they feel they're going to be against this and get kicked out of office, they're going to support the legislation in their state to make this legal, which is really where this all goes, back to the states. So I don't know, you know, that this seems to me like I can understand why people who are pro-life are happy, but this could be a problem in the long run for that group, because now it's going to the politician. 740-751-4038. Give me a buzz if you have anything to say. That's my little spiel on that. 740-751-4038. Does anybody have anything to say in regard to the whole Roe versus Wade thing? Certainly, you could not get away from it over the weekend. As I say, church services, radio shows, television, it just newspapers, it was everywhere. And it's going to be interesting when these local city councils are making the decision on this. I don't, and did you hear the statement our governor made on it on Friday? You know, it certainly was not definitive one way or another. It's kind of interesting what DeWine had to say. Let me try to see if I can pull it up here. It says, Governor DeWine on Friday urged Ohioans on both sides of the abortion divide to be civil and respectful. It's going to be very easy to let this debate get down and be rough and tough, and there is nothing wrong with a spirited debate, but I think the way that we do it, and do it in a civil way, and with respect for each other, is important. So, that's how that's going to go. So basically, he's just saying, I guess we're going to have the debate. He really didn't come down one way or another on that particular issue. So, all that being said, does anybody have anything to say? 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038. If you want to talk about that issue, we can do it. Or we can talk about anything else. Now, one thing I did want to do this morning, though. This interview is not a particularly long one, but I did want to play it this morning, just to give some context. Sarah Weddington, back in 1973, was the lawyer who argued the Roe versus Wade case back in 1973. that made abortion legal. Now, Sarah passed away in December of last year, December of 2021, I believe. But I interviewed Sarah Weddington back in 2013, January 24th, 2013, on the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, 9 years before it was repealed, 9.5 years before it was repealed. And of course, Sarah is now no longer with us. Actually, the lady she argued the case for, who you'll hear us talking about in this interview, is also gone. I believe she died in 2017. So we're going to go back in the archives here a decade, more than a decade and a half, I guess, and listen to an interview I did with Sarah Weddington. And again, I believe this interview is, maybe a little less than a decade, 2013. I believe this is January 24th, 2013, Sarah Weddington, who again passed away in December of last year, talking about the Roe versus Wade case. It's an interesting interview because you'll have to hear, Sarah and I had a little bit of a contretemps at the end, but you'll understand it listening to the whole interview. So here is Sarah Weddington.
This is Scott Spears, and today we remember the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion. We are joined by the attorney that won that case, Sarah Weddington. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on a week that certainly has significance.
Oh, it certainly does. And as you have probably noticed, there has been lots of press focused on this. But you're one of the few that got me on the program.
Well, I tell you what, I'm very happy to, because this is kind of important to me, because as far as I'm concerned, whether people love or hate you or agree or disagree, you certainly have a place in history.
Well, that is for sure. Time Magazine a few years ago did a thing called 80 Days That Changed the World. And as you might guess, Roe versus Wade was one of them.
I can imagine. And you know, Sarah, I kind of want to start here back a little ways. What was your childhood like? What was your growing up?
Well, my father was a Methodist preacher. He's now deceased. And mother was basically a housewife, and then she got her master's and taught like shorthand and typing and clerical skills. Methodists moved their preachers every 4 years. So I lived in Mundy, Canyon, Vernon, Lubbock, and Abilene, Texas, which a lot of people have never heard of. But, you know, they were good places to grow up. And so I really enjoyed that. And then I started in various leadership positions as I was maturing. I was the president of the Future Homemakers of America of Canyon High School. Then I was the drum major for the Canyon Junior High Band. And, you know, just kept being in leadership positions. Went to a Methodist college named McMurray, then college, now university. And there I was secretary of the student body, and, you know, just enjoyed being in leadership, enjoyed trying to make things better for people. Daddy used to, he's not really the hell and brimstone type of preacher, but he was much more someone who was what I call the gospel of Christian social concern, where you're always trying to make things better. And so it was a happy childhood, mostly in West Texas. A little bit of travel, but only to Chicago. Then, you know, after I matured, I came to law school and then worked for the city of Fort Worth as an assistant city attorney. And it was a fairly standard upbringing, except I was probably involved in more leadership material in a position than a lot of people.
You know, Sarah, the thing, as I've talked about Roe versus Wade this week to people, and I know there's a lot to it, and certainly you would know a lot about it, but if you had to condense it to 60 seconds, 2 minutes maybe, 120 seconds, if you had to describe what was Roe v. Wade for people who don't understand anything but the title, what happened there?
Well, first there was a law in Texas that said no abortion is legal except if necessary to save the life of the woman. So what was happening was a lot of women in Austin and around Texas, other places too, were going to California, where abortion was legal, to New York, where abortion was legal, to other places where it was illegal, and a lot of those women were ending up in very serious medical problems because they had tried to do self-abortion or illegal abortion. The one thing that I'm absolutely sure of is that if abortion is ever illegal again, there will be lots of illegal abortion. It doesn't stop it. It just makes it more dangerous and a lot more of them. The second thing is, as I look back, going to the court, we argued that there was a right of privacy to make one's own decisions and that the government and politicians should not make very personal decisions. There had been a law that said people cannot use contraception, and if anybody does and someone helps them, they're an accomplice to a crime. And in 1965, the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled that there was a right of privacy to decide whether to bear or beget a child. So we were really following up on those arguments, and as you know, we did win. In January 22nd, 1973, what has really been a surprise for me is that we're still arguing about it.
Well, before we get to that, because there's a lot of questions I have based on that, tell me about January 22nd, 1973.
Well, I had argued the case. They think, although they don't always ask everyone's age, but the people at the court think I'm the youngest person ever to argue a case in the Supreme Court. And I had argued it, but then didn't know if I was winning or losing, so I ended up coming back to Austin and running for the state legislature and ended up winning that seat. I was the first woman from Austin Travis County to ever have a position or a seat in the state legislature. I'd been sworn in about a week earlier. I was over at the Capitol the morning of January 22nd, and the phone rang, and an assistant answered it, and a reporter from the New York Times said, "Does Miss Weddington have a comment today about Roe versus Wade?" And my assistant said, "Well, should she?" And the reporter said it was decided today. And the my assistant said, "How was it decided?" And the reporter said, "She won it, 7-2. And then a few minutes later, I got a copy. First I got a telegram from the Supreme Court telling me I'd won, and they were mailing a copy of the opinion. Now, what that reminds me of is just how long ago the case was. Because if you think about it, there are no such things as telegrams anymore. You cannot send one. And then you think about, you know, nobody would wait until they could get an error mail message. They would go on the internet and get it instantly. So times have really changed, but what has not changed is that women prefer to make their own decisions in consultation with those who are closest to them.
When you got the word that you had won that case, what did that mean to you?
Well, a lot, because the Supreme Court decisions normally kind of last forever. They're not just a one or two deal. And in this case, it meant that there would be millions of women who would have the right to make their own decisions about when they would continue or terminate a pregnancy, and the government would have no right to tell them what to do. And that was also at the time you had, you know, a lot of women, my age at least, remember when they could not get access to credit without a man's signature, their husband or their father. It was a time when women played half-court basketball. They weren't allowed to run full court. There have just been so many things that have changed since then, and I'm glad of it.
In 1973, when this came down, Sarah, you said your father was a minister, and this is so intertwined with religion nowadays. Was your father and mother living then?
Oh, yeah.
What were their thoughts on that?
Well, it was twofold. One is the Board of Women in the United Methodist Church and the General Church had a position that said it should be up to the woman to decide, and hopefully with her spiritual counselors. Because the Methodist Church position was that, you know, women know best what is best for their families. And some of the polls out just this week were pointing out that most women who have an abortion have one or possibly two children already. And what they're really trying to do is conserve resources for the children they already have. It was so the Methodist Church was basically in our favor, and Daddy and Mother were too. You also had a lot of the Jewish groups were in our favor, Episcopalians, Unitarians. So there were a lot of religious groups that were in our favor. You just don't hear quite as much from them as you do the ones who are very much opposed.
You know, Sarah, something very interesting. When you were describing Roe versus Wade there, you said that you never thought it'd be an issue 40 years later. Why is it?
Well, we've tried to figure that out, and I'm not sure I totally understand it. I do think partially you get people like the National Catholic Bishops who are adamant that they want Roe versus Wade overturned, who put a lot of time and effort into it. Some of the Tea Party folks this year were insisting that candidates vote against anything related to Roe versus Wade, or they would see they never got elected again. So you had a few groups who were adamant that they did not want Roe versus Wade to be the law of the land, and they were able to reach out and get some folks to come with them. Now, I think the Republican Party is starting to rethink what their position should be. And part of that is because they are seeing that, at least as to women, the majority of women voted against their candidates. And most people think it was because those women were essentially saying with their vote, I'm not going to let you make this decision for me. Some people remember Todd Akin, who was a Republican candidate in Indiana, who said, if there is a legitimate rape, the woman can't get pregnant, her body will close down. And there was a cartoon after that, and it was this woman's fingernail on a button that said vote. And above it, the caption was, women can shut this thing down through their vote. I think there were a lot of people who were determined that male politicians not take over.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. You know, Sarah, it's interesting because an interview I did years ago was with the late actress Bea Arthur, who had the first acted the first abortion on her TV series Maude in 1972, I believe it was.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. Well, one thing she said that always I found fascinating was she said she got a lot of mail when that happened. Some of it good, some of it bad. But she said the bad mail was not really what you think of. It's not the bombing of abortion clinics and things like that. She said it was thoughtful mail from people who had really thought it through. And she said she didn't agree with it, but she understood it. Do you understand the opposing viewpoint?
Not sure I totally understand it. I understand they have the right to their own point of view, but I don't think they have the right to force their point of view on a lot of other people who don't agree.
I know we'll get some flack for this today because it's a hot issue. It always has been. For those people who do have a very strong feeling about it and use the term baby killers and throw the religion out there, what do you say to those people?
Well, I think there are a lot of different religions that have very different points of view. And if you look at the religious groups who were in our favor, that is made clear. So they have the right to their own religious beliefs, but one set of religious beliefs cannot be forced on everybody else. And so if you look at the Constitution, it says all persons born or naturalized. We have never given passports to prior to birth. You don't pay income tax prior to birth. You don't get a deduction on your income tax for a child until after birth. If you just look at how we have always treated women, it's after birth. So legally, I do believe that our country has always said it's after birth.
You know, Sarah, I can only imagine you've given speeches. You continue to do that. You've been on the staff at colleges and practiced law in the last 40 years. With this kind of around you, people have to know who you are when you come into a meeting or a group or a gathering. What is the weirdest situation you've ever been put in the last 40 years, knowing that you were the one who got this passed through?
I don't know what the weirdest is because I've been in so many different situations. I do remember I'd given a speech in Las Vegas, and I was going back to the airport, and the driver said to me, "Are you that abortion woman?" And I didn't know what was coming next. But he basically explained to me how he and his fiance already had a boy. She did. They were trying to raise him. She had gotten pregnant, but in a pregnancy that they thought would have real difficulties. And so they had decided to have an abortion. And so he was telling me about his personal situation to say he was so glad they got to make their own choice. And I've had lots of women who said, you know, I was pregnant. I really thought through what I should do. I decided not to have an abortion, but I'm so glad it was my decision, not somebody forcing me into their view of what I should do.
You know, Sarah, early on in this interview, one thing that caught my ear was you said that you didn't know if this was if this is ever overturned, what would happen? You know, possibly people you feel would be going out and getting in trouble again in the alleys or whatever they were doing. Do you feel it will ever be overturned?
You have a question that has a different answer every 4 years. Now, with Obama as president, if there were vacancies on the Supreme Court, I think he would appoint a new justice who would be in favor of Roe versus Wade. If Romney had been elected, I'm sure he would have been under tremendous pressure to appoint someone against. So part of it is a question of who is on the Supreme Court. Obviously, Obama will be leaving the White House in 4 years, and someone else will be elected. And I don't think at this point any of us can say, well, here are who the candidates are going to be, and here's what's going to happen. So what the opposition has done now is say, well, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to overturn the law of Roe versus Wade. So let's try to make it where women do not have access to the procedure by passing through state legislatures all kinds of restrictions. And that's where the real difficulty is right now. I don't think Roe's going to be overturned in the next 4 years. But I do see a lot of state legislatures passing laws that make it more and more difficult for women to have access to services and for doctors to meet the need for services.
You know, Sarah, what would happen if in your lifetime, or maybe after you're gone, after we're all gone, it was overturned? If we were to play this interview, if that ever happened, what would that mean to you if it was overturned?
Well, first it would mean that the presidency would have been dramatically different, that the people on the Supreme Court would be dramatically different, that women would not have the kind of options. I would wonder whether or not they had managed to overturn the privacy that relates to contraception. You know, there were states that had contraception being illegal, both for married and unmarried people. And the court said you can't do that based on the right of privacy. So I'd have to think about, well, what are the other things this is going to relate to?
I think that's something certainly to think about. You know, Sarah, before we get out of this interview, and it's been fascinating and really a piece of history, I would say, I would venture to guess, that the person most tied with your name in this whole last 40 years time period is Norma McCorvey. And as most people know now, it was pointed out to me this past week, Norma became pro-life at a point in her life, which is kind of ironic, I think, to most people when they talk about it. Have you talked to Norma since she became...
No, she was pro-choice for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And if you read an article in the February issue of Vanity Fair, it's a writer who talked to her mother, talked to the first child she had who was taken away from her by her mother because the mother convinced a court that Norma McCorvey was unfit to raise a child. And the writer's line that I found most interesting myself is he said, Norma McCorvey is not pro-choice. She is not anti-choice. She is pro-Norma McCorvey. And whatever she sees as being good for her financial situation, that's what she does.
Do you agree with that?
I don't know everything about her life, and I'm not in a position to say, well, she can't believe that. I think everybody has the right to their own opinion. But it has seemed to me that that is a fairly accurate statement.
I do want to bring this up, because in trying to keep the balance here, on this anniversary week, we did reach out to Norma to ask her thoughts on this week and on you, Sarah, because I knew we were going to be doing this interview. She's not doing any interviews this week, but she did release a statement, and again, her words, not mine, but the statement she released was, I was persuaded by feminist attorneys to lie, to say that I was raped and needed an abortion. It was all a lie. I think it's safe to say the entire abortion industry is based on a lie. I am dedicated to spending the rest of my life undoing the law that bears my name.
That is a lie in several ways. One, when we first met her, she said, would it help if I'd been raped? And we said, absolutely not. The law in Texas is that no abortion except to save the life of the woman. So a rape is not a legal justification for an abortion in Texas. So there is nothing in the case about how she got pregnant. It was a class action for all women who were or might become pregnant and want the option of abortion. But after the case was decided, a reporter did an interview with her, and there was an article printed in the Good Housekeeping magazine, 6 months after the decision or something like that. And when I read that, it had Norma McCorvey saying to the reporter, I was going from the seedy carnival where I worked in rural Georgia in 1969 to the seedy hotel where I was staying, and three men, a black, a white, and possibly a Hispanic, brutally raped me. Now, how often in rural Georgia in 1969 was that a normal group of people being together? I don't believe that for a minute. And so when she sold her story for a movie, the movie was going to start with a dramatic rape scene. Well, in the meantime, Carl Rowan, who was a Washington columnist and a TV personality, did an interview with her, and he said, what about the rape? And she said, I lied. So, yes, she has lied, and I get really tired of her trying to blame lies on other people when she was the one that was lying. And you can check that out, and I'm really tired of her.
When you hear that, Sarah, what does that make you think? I mean, when that's her quote, that's what she releases on this historic week.
It makes me think I made a mistake agreeing to this interview, because if you checked it out, you would have known it was a lie.
Oh, I'm not saying that it's the truth, Sarah. I'm just saying that that's what she said.
Yeah, well, that's enough. I'm not going to dignify it anymore. It is a lie. And so what do you want to talk about next?
How would you like to be remembered, Sarah?
Well, in some way, you always think I'd like to be remembered for something I haven't done yet, but I don't think there's anything bigger in its impact and in opening opportunities for women to make their own decisions with their spiritual advisors, with the men who are special in their lives, with their doctors. nothing has had such an impact as Roe versus Wade.
Well, Sarah, I do certainly appreciate you for coming on. I hope you don't regret this. That was not the intention of that quote. That's just what she released. And I know people feel very strongly on this both ways and didn't want to be accused of giving any bias either way.
I see. Okay. Well, thanks so much. I'm off to do some other things.
Thank you, Sarah.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
That was Sarah Weddington, who argued the Roe versus Wade case, an interview I did with her in 2013 on the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, 9.5 years ago. And again, Sarah passed away in December of 2021. So the question, you know, I had not listened to that whole thing probably since I did it 9.5 years ago. And it's interesting to me that I asked her, if this gets overturned after we're all gone, what does it mean? Well, that happened, because Sarah is no longer with us. So there you go. All right. Go ahead, caller. Are you there, caller?
Yes, Scott. Did you get that envelope yet?
No, I haven't got the envelope yet.
Yeah, the one I put over to your radio station.
I think I'm going to go over there sometime soon.
Well, the Marion Star, I don't know if it's been a month ago, they had a whole page on that Roe. I guess that was her name.
Yeah, Norma McCorvey was her name.
Oh, okay. They had a whole page on her. I just listened to your interview.
Yeah.
And I'm not for sure, because I had read it, but it was in, I don't know, a month or so ago. But I believe she had three kids. The first one, the little girl, Mills, was her grandma. Well, her mom raised her some, and she did. But it's here and there, if I'm not mistaken, that the lady was gay, but she had three kids. And her partner wanted to, when they separated, wanted to keep the little girl, and she wouldn't let her. And she said, what it said in there, that she was very wild, just like parties and drinking. And then the second one she adopted, but I think there was a third one, but I don't believe she ever had an abortion. And I don't know.
Norma Norma McCorvey did. Yes, she did.
She had an abortion.
Yeah, and just for the record, that interview was 2013. Sarah, who I interviewed there, the lawyer, is no longer with us. She died in December of last year, and Norma McCorvey died in 2017. Now, she was still alive when we did that, but she died in 2017.
Yeah, it said the second one. I don't believe it said whether it was a boy or girl, but she adopted that one out. And then the third one, I don't know if it said. Maybe she did. But it said, but in the paper, the write-up, it said that they used her. She wanted, like, money. I don't know if she got paid for appearances. And then at the very end, she said that she wished she'd never done it. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's what Sarah said there. That's why she got angry at the end, is because after the case, all of a sudden, the story changed a little bit.
Yeah, well, it said she, I guess, had become a Christian or something. She didn't believe it. But one thing I have a question is, does the partner or the husband have any rights? You know, I know if the woman doesn't want to have the baby, I guess his rights, you know, he doesn't have any rights, I guess.
You can't
make her have a baby.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, yeah, it's an interesting topic. I thank you for calling in, though. I'm going to have to look at that article.
Well, no, I have a question.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Say if Ohio makes it law, then why would you have to go, say, Columbus, Cleveland, or someplace? Why not go over at Marion General and have the abortion?
Well, that's what I was talking.
It's not illegal.
That's what I was talking about earlier. That I.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Well, yeah, if I started this hour.
Yeah, because I know these places are funded with millions of dollars. It would just pay to, you know, to like Marion, just go right there, or Mount Gilead, or wherever. You just go right to your own hospital, and unless the doctors wouldn't do it. Now, that I don't know.
I
just heard some of it there, so I thought I'd call in, because that envelope, it has that whole page of about her.
I'm going to try to grab that. Well, we're just running low on time, but I thank you for calling in.
Goodbye.
All right. If you were trying to call in, I wanted to get our other call in. Somebody was trying to call there. 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038, 57 and a half minutes past the hour. And again, that Sarah Weddington interview was from 2013. Sarah passed away in December of 2021. She was the lawyer who argued and won the Roe versus Wade case and got a little steamed at the end. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Scott, you know, the thing that I don't know, even bothers me or whatever is abortion rates have fallen consistently every year. And currently the abortion rate is the lowest it's ever been. Why not pass some bills to help bring it down further? If a woman does not want the child, she could get into a program where she would have the baby, put it up for adoption. You know, some women can't work during pregnancy very well. Some women can. But, you know, a lot of women get sick. But help the woman financially or whatever and have the child and put it up for adoption.
It's
more programs like that than saying, no, this is what you got to do.
We're running out of time, but that's an interesting point. Thank you. All right, don't forget mid-morning coffee break with Adam Lepp coming up next, 10:15 until 11 a.m. Voice of a People with Linda Sims today, 4:15 until 5 o'clock. Don't miss any of those programs today on this station, and I'm pretty sure next hour is going to be devoted to this topic as well, as I think Adam is having on Dr. Feynman. We've got a great group of guests coming up this week. You're not going to want to miss any of that. The fair, a week away. Today is a week away from July 4th. Can you believe that? This year is flying right by. Holy mackerel. Well, I hope everybody has a great Monday. Hope you enjoy yourself. God willing, we'll be back here on Tuesday with more discussion, topics, giveaways, and fun. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio. For Emmy Award-winning actress and voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll, sharing her experience of being in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
One of the big traditions for a lot of people on Thanksgiving is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Yes, absolutely. And I was in it one year. I played Mother Goose.
Did you?